Welcome to Let's Talk Wheels, everybody. My name is Matt Perrault. How are you? Mike Herz is going to be alongside in just 1 second. We've got a great show lined up for you guys today. Okay, so for the news and notes segment, Jeremy Barenbaum is going to step in for me here with Mike Herzing. Now, if you haven't heard Jeremy on the podcast, I definitely recommend hanging out for this news and notes segment because Mike and Jeremy talk about everything to do with classic cars. Classic.com is where Jeremy is and what his website is. And they do a great job of talking about everything to do with restoration and the markets and buying and selling classic cars. And Mike and Jeremy do a great job of getting into a ton of really in-depth and cool conversations. So stay tuned for that. Then we've got a conversation, well, the reviews for this week. I'm going to review a Volkswagen Arteon. Mike's going to review a Ram truck he's got for you, a diesel, 1500 diesel that he's going to be talking about coming up this week. So a lot of good things on the show. The podcast is always awesome because it is 1 hour plus of audio that we give you guys each and every week, and we highly recommend and we want you guys to go ahead and subscribe to that podcast. But we've got some cool things coming down the pike. COVID-19 really has changed the automotive reviews and the automotive experience for journalists. And we're starting to begin to see the start of things kind of picking back up again. And we're starting to get into events again. And we're starting to feel like in 2021, we're going to get back to kind of how we were with launches and vehicles being put onto the market where we can drive it and review it and kind of go back to how the show was. I mean, I haven't seen Mike in almost a year now. So we used to get together every couple of months because we'd be on these drives and we'd go to these places for launches, whether it be cars, trucks, SUVs, whatever. And we haven't been able to do that. So we're looking forward to the opportunity to get back to that. And we've got some things that we're going to talk about later on in this fall and in the fall that we're going to talk about in Texas that will be really cool from an off-roading perspective to get to review some vehicles. So we're excited about the future. We thank you guys for sticking with us and listening to us and being a part of the Let's Talk Wheels family. It's been a lot of fun for us over the last couple of years, but this has been a very challenging year for 2020 as it has been for everyone. So looking forward to the future. Up next, Mike Herzing is joined by Jeremy Barenbaum for the news and notes segment, then our reviews and more. It's all on this week's edition of Let's Talk Wheels on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
Hey, folks, welcome back to Let's Talk Wheels. I'm Mike Herzing. Matt Perrault's off this week, but don't worry. It's all cool. We have Jeremy Barenbaum from Classic.com to help us out today. Jeremy, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well.
I know.
How are you doing, Mike?
How are things down in L.A. this week?
Everything's great. It's a little bit hot, but I'm getting used to it.
Oh, you're just whining because you used to be in San Francisco and it's where it's nice and cool, but that's okay, isn't it?
Yeah, these 100-degree days are getting me.
Oh, you'll live. All right. There's a lot of stuff going on in the industry this week. One thing it's good or bad. Toyota's going to supposedly drop the Land Cruiser right after for 2021. So we've got the one coming up next year, and that's going to be it. What do you think about that?
You know, it's interesting. You know, I hear that Toyota spends a lot of money on that car. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they basically make the exact same model as the LX570 and Lexus.
Right.
So for them, it's like, why are we creating two of the exact same things? I'm sure it comes down to dollars and cents, in my opinion. I'm right. A little bit sad about it because the Land Cruiser's been around forever. And in my opinion, it looks much better than the Lexus. I know the Lexus is billed as like, you know, they're high-end, all the bells and whistles
right.
and everything. But the Land Cruiser was just a bulletproof, solid off-road car. And a lot of people didn't really give it the credit where credit's due and how capable that car was.
You know, you're right. But also, it hasn't really changed in 15 years. You know, the fuel economy. I've got a couple friends that one guy bought one in 2019 or 2020, and he paid over $80,000 for it. I think he's $81,000
yep.
for it. It gets 12 and 13 miles a gallon if he just milks it a little bit. It drives it real easy and get 13. It's got a 20-gallon fuel tank. So it's really the fuel economy is, you know, less than 300 miles on, you know, 250-something miles on a tank. It's crazy. And like I said, they only sold, 3,536 in 2019, up from 3,222. Come on. they didn't sell enough of them to work it. Now, that's one thing. But the other side of that is, because they haven't really changed it, they've just upgraded the interior a tiny bit in all these years, they're making a lot of money on it because all the production, all the costs are gone, right?
Yeah.
And
that makes a lot of sense.
And they're going to have to spend, they would have to spend a lot of money on it. And the Sequoia is so close to it now. Sequoia's gotten so nice that why wouldn't you just buy a Sequoia, right?
Yeah, I think that's kind of happened with a lot of vehicles in dealers' ranges. They're realizing that they're overlapping. One vehicle is eating into the other vehicle's sales, and at some point they have to decide which one is the one vehicle to keep around.
You know, you're right. I've got a really good friend of mine. Mike Halls has a 98 Land Cruiser, and he loves it. He just spent $5,000 making the interior nicer. You know, it's a 98, you know, but he loves
it.
Yeah,
I mean, they have a cult following. I don't think people that are buying a Land Cruiser are really concerned about miles per gallon. You know, yeah. They're buying it because they need a very specific car for a very specific reason. You know, it's frame on body. Or a body-on-frame car. So if you are going to take it off-roading or do anything out in the desert or in the mountains, mm-hmm. It's very reliable, it's very dependable, and I think that's what you're buying when you get a Toyota.
Yeah, no kidding. I tell you what, but you know, it's funny, is the Land Cruiser nameplate, I'm sure at some point it's going to be back. It's been around for 60 years.
Oh, for sure.
They'll do the nameplate, because there's more and more of these companies. You know, Chevy brought back the Blazer name. They're bringing back all kinds of names. You know, the Broncos came back and things like that. I can't wait till Ford brings back the Pinto and the Granada.
You never know. If it could be one of those things where they cancel it for a little bit because they know when they bring it back, it'll have one, they can probably bring back a totally new car instead of having right. to, you know, do like what we're talking about, how it hasn't been upgraded in a while. And two, it'll have that new, it'll be the new talk of the town when they bring it back. Oh, the Land Cruiser's back. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Kind of like the Bronco or whatever.
Yeah, it'll be like the Bronco. It took 25 years for it to come back. But, you know, people, you know, it's funny how they're recycling some of the nameplates. I read here that there's a new battery car, battery electric vehicle concept from Buick, and they're going to, looks like they're going to name it the Electra. Remember the old Electra that came out in 59?
Yeah, it was, you know, kind of a competitor or you know, the opposite to the Cadillac Eldorado, correct?
Yeah, it was.
And you know, it's kind of new age design, you know, for in the 50s. It had very sharp lines and fins coming out of it. So I think that's kind of what they're going to be trying to do with this new battery car.
Oh, I think it's going to be great. You know, I mean, it's, they're looking at here, this thing is, and it's a real space age looking with gold wing doors and things like that. And it's got the new Ultium technology, which is, you know, one of those that it just basically, it's all wheel drive. It's going to have 583 horsepower with two motors, and it's going to be, you know, 0 to 60 in a little over 4 seconds. Supposed to have 412 miles per charge. Which really kind of works, you know?
Yeah, that's 400 miles is a really good range. And you have to give it to Buick for bringing back the Electra name, because that's one of those names that's been sitting on the shelf, prime for a reboot, especially in this, you know, very electric-heavy car world that we're in.
Well, you know, you're right. And so there's lots of, you know, roadmasters and, you know, all the kind of good stuff that they could bring back. It'd be kind of fun, but there's just so many neat, you know, somebody told me the other day that GM was going to maybe bring back the the Montana name, which would be kind of a cool SUV.
Yeah.
There's just all kinds of things going on in the industry that, it's just kind of cool. I mean, but the battery electric vehicle, they say it's 412 miles of range. But people don't realize that's 412 miles of no air conditioning with no heating, you know.
You bring that up, though. I had my fiance's brother here the other day who just bought a Tesla Model 3.
Uh-huh.
He drove from San Francisco to Arizona, drove around Arizona for a couple of days, and then drove through LA back to San Francisco. So he had to do the whole charging thing. You know, they did long hours. And he said he had a great time. He didn't really, didn't feel like the charging was hurting him. But to your point about, you know, when you use the accessories and everything, he was showing me how he can leave the car in what's called dog mode, where you leave your dog inside the car, it has the AC running, and it shows on the screen like some text that says, hey, the AC's on, my owner's coming back, everything's safe. And I said to him, when you put the car in that mode and you come back, is the battery 5 miles less, 10 miles less, 40 miles less? And I'm surprised if it's 1 or 2 miles difference in an hour's worth of the AC running with the dog in there. And that was pretty impressive to me. I was surprised by that.
That is really cool, except I'd be really still nervous about having a dog in there in case something went wrong. You'd lose your dog. But
I'm more worried about it chewing up the interior or something like that. But
well, you know, kids are that way, too. You know, when do you get a few? That way you'll know they chew up the interior, too. but there's more in the diesel battery electric stuff. Later on in the show, folks, we're going to talk to Brandon Ramirez, because Hyundai's getting into the big trucks, Class 8 trucks. You know, they've been in it for years, but they're now getting into them with a fuel cell vehicle, which is basically where they use hydrogen, and it splits the molecules and makes electricity to run the electric motors. So think of it as a battery electric vehicle without the battery. And so it really, really is the thing coming. I know there in California they sell the Nexo, which is a little SUV that's hydrogen powered. Have you ever seen any of those around?
Yeah, every once in a while I see a hydrogen powered car. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, they are. And, you know,
he loved it.
Yeah, well, you know, when you think about it, the emissions are water vapor. That's it. And that's a whole lot cleaner than anything. Yeah, and you don't have to worry about batteries or, you know, where any of that stuff came. But, folks, we have a lot of cool stuff in the show today. We're actually going to bring Jeremy back on later in the show for the podcast, and we're going to talk about some classic car stuff and my adventure of looking for a classic truck right now as we speak, and some of the pitfalls and some of the good things and bad things. We're going to talk about all of that stuff. And we got a lot of stuff going on. It's going to be a great show. Matt and I both have reviews. I've got, you know, a really cool Ram Rubble. A lot of stuff going on right here on Let's Talk Wheels, so just hang on. We're going to have a great day.
It's Let's Talk Wheels. Matt Perrault with you. Mike Herzing's got a review for you here in just 1 second with a Ram diesel truck. But I was driving this week a 2020 Volkswagen Arteon 2.0 TSE 4 Motion. Now, here is a vehicle that is very similar to the CC. I had a different model. I had the R-Line earlier. So this is not as sporty, not as fancy, a little less expensive, you know, still about $35,000, $36,000. But, you know, this is a pretty nice vehicle. And I was still very impressed, even without the R-Line, the extra oomph, if you will, with the turbo engine. Still a pretty good engine and still something that really can get up and go. Very sleek. Big, big storage. The thing about this vehicle is the fact that you've got just a gigantic trunk and a really big back seat. It's a very, very comfortable vehicle. It's not the quietest of vehicles. And, I mean, it's, you know, for a vehicle that's a little pricey, it doesn't have some of the things you might expect with kind of it's not an entry-level luxury price. But it does still feel like an entry-level luxury vehicle. But, I mean, it's bigger and nicer than the CC. It is bigger and nicer than the Passat, and it's nowhere near the Jetta. So, I mean, this is a vehicle that I think when you get into it and you drive it, it's pretty sporty. I mean, it can really, it can move. And I'm very impressed with the overall handling of this vehicle. I'm very impressed with some of the, you know, some of the things that they offer in the SEL model with, you know, the sunroof, and you've got power folding mirrors that are really nice, which is nice for here in Vegas. We oftentimes are driving in very big garages, so your mirrors get dinged all the time. It's really kind of annoying when that happens. So it's nice when you don't have to worry about that. And the LED headlights are really nice. You got keyless entry and ignition, heated front seats. You've got a tri-zone climate control, the 8-inch touchscreen with Apple CarPlay and Android Auto. Very cool. 8-speaker audio sound system, which is nice. Your in-car Wi-Fi hotspot, which is nice. You got that. Your forward collision brake warning alert, if anything's going to happen. Blind spot monitoring alerts you if a vehicle is coming, you know, over to you in your blind spot, and your rear traffic alert, which is great because big screen, very clear camera, and lets you see what's around you. So, you know, the suspension is tight. It's, you know, your typical German engineering, so you feel like you're driving a vehicle that has, you know, when you ask it to go, it moves. When you ask it to move around, it does. The thing that I would say about this vehicle that it isn't really a knock, it's just that the tech package is pretty, it has a lot of things it does, right? It's a little bit can be a little bit confusing, and it's a little bit of a of a difficult situation when you're trying to figure out what to do. I still think that there are some bugs in the Apple CarPlay system with Volkswagens that they need to work out just a little bit, but that's a very minor thing for this vehicle. If you're looking for a sport sedan and you either like the CC or you didn't like the CC and you want to take a look at a vehicle, Volkswagen does a really nice job. And the one thing about Volkswagen that I really like is that they have done a good job with really putting out, I think, these vehicles and separating them and making them look very unique. So you know you're looking at a CC Arteon a Volkswagen Arteon when you see it on the road. It has a very distinct, the lines, the grill, the wheels, looking at it from a back, very sleek. It has a lot of things there that is nice. I mean, I'm a big fan. As I said before, I had two of these and I had some opportunities, to really get for 6 years, two leases back-to-back with Volkswagen CC. So I liked it a lot. So if you are in the market for a luxury sport sedan, definitely check this out because you can get all different levels, all different lines on it for under $40,000. It's the 2020 Volkswagen Arteon 2.0 TSE 4Motion. Definitely check it out. All right, Mike, what were you driving?
Hey, folks, this week I was driving the 2020 Ram 1500 Rebel. Now, it's the crew cab, and this truck, to say this truck is nice interior is an understatement. As a matter of fact, this interior has won Luxury Car of the Year from a couple of companies online, and it's really true. This is nice as anything you'll find from Audi or Mercedes or anything else. It's just so comfortable, and to have it in a truck is really nice because people live in these suckers. I mean, they're in it all the time, and so am I. Now, this one had a powertrain to die for. This one has the 3-liter eco diesel. Now, I like the Hemi, I like the V6, I like all that stuff, but the 3-liter diesel, I tell you what, this thing is awesome. Got 8-speed transmission, has the right gear all the time. 30 miles to gallon is what I got having it this week. You know, if I can get 30 miles to gallon in a big truck, besides being able to tow 12,503 pounds, I don't have to buy a heavy duty truck. I can do a lot of it with this. For people that just tow, 4 or 5 times a year to camper or something like that, this is your vehicle because the diesel is not terribly expensive add on. It's really it's nice. This one had a giant dual pane sunroof. It had all the safety features. Now the base price on this is about $47,000. Once you load it up with all kinds of stuff here, like air suspension and things like that, which is really nice. Mine had all of the adaptive cruise controls, goes all the way down to a stop and then go again. It has the advanced brake assist, automatic high beams, collision warning, lane keeping assist, all the safety features. But let's just put it that way. It's got the cross traffic warnings and everything. In other words, it keeps you from doing anything stupid. You're backing up and you don't realize there's somebody there or somebody coming across in the parking lot. It stops you or it tells you, goes crazy. And that's all you can expect when you get up close and you're trying to park. It's a pretty big truck. It'll help you. It's got all these around view cameras and it's got cameras in the bed and cameras for that. And also this one had the fancy tailgate. And a lot of tailgates are really cool and that's a big deal now. But this one is the only one that opens up 60-40 and it swings to the side or comes down. And that is really handy when you're trying to get to something in the bed. These trucks are so tall now. Granted, it's got a nice step and a way to get up in it, but it's just handy. I mean, the Ram they've worked so hard at this, and this thing is really starting to show. But it was a Rebel, which means it's a little off-roadish. Got the skid plates, and it's a little bit taller and bigger wheels and tires. But still, you live in this thing. 19-speaker Harman Kardon premium sound system, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, heated seats, heated rear seats. The rear seat, it's the biggest cab in the industry. The rear seats recline. Not a lot, but enough to really make it nice on a trip for the passengers. Besides the fact that I've got a friend that's 6'4 and could easily fit back there in the back seat and just spend all day. He says this has got more room than I think than his truck has in the front. So really nice vehicle. Like I said, all the goodies, the media hub, USB ports, plug in this, charging this, everything you want to do, you can do in this truck. It's got a really neat center console, which doesn't have any electronics in it. So when you spill something,
you're okay. It doesn't cost you thousands of dollars because you spilt your big gulp or whatever, or your coffee. And so that's really nice. Power adjustable pedals, you know, power folding mirrors, rain sensing wipers, all kinds of rear under seat. I love this fact. This is the cool thing, the Ram feature. I own a Ram, and this is one of the reasons. Back seat, you open up the, you know, the back doors, and you pull the floor mat out of the way, and you've got storage under the floor. Best of all, they make companies make locks so you can put on that. I have a lock from Tuffy Products. It locks that, okay? So if you need to carry something, you know, a treasure like your handgun or your something or this or that, you want to put your wallet in there and then just carry your keys, you're okay. Nobody's going to get it. This one also had the Ram boxes, which are on the side, the boxes. That is one of the coolest features. The sunroof, which is a $1,400, I could do without. The diesel is a $49.95 option, and it's absolutely worth it versus the $9,000 for the big diesels. Air suspension, kind of nice. It drops you down on the freeway, and that's on the highway, and that gets you that better fuel economy. It just, like I said, this is an awesome truck. Spray in bed liner, trailer brake controls. The Ram boxes are $900. My truck doesn't have that, and I wished it did, but they didn't have any in stock. Tell you what, folks, just if you're going to love the Ram, you're going to love it. Okay, it's, it runs about $70,000 with this sticker. You can get a better deal than that. Same price as everybody else. You're looking for a really cool truck that you're going to keep for a long time and you're practically going to live in. The 2020 Ram Rebel or any of the Ram 1500s are awesome.
Okay, folks, as we talked about earlier in the show, we're going to have Brandon Ramirez, who is the senior group manager for product PR for Hyundai USA. And Brandon's going to talk to us about the new Hyundai fuel cell truck. So, hey, Brandon, welcome to Let's Talk Wheels, bud.
Great. Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me, Mike.
Well, I know that not everybody realizes how Hyundai is into big trucks. I mean, they call them Class 8. Everybody would call them 18-wheelers. I didn't, you know, still I started looking around. I didn't notice, Brandon, you had mentioned that you guys sell a bunch of trailers and a bunch of equipment that's Hyundai. Hyundai's not just cars, right?
Yeah. And we sell SUVs and cars. And you know what? The great thing about our lineup is we have a full spectrum of different powertrains. You know, we'll have electric vehicles, and we'll have we even have a hydrogen vehicle, Nexo. But the value of having a hydrogen vehicle is it's very scalable. You could put it in a small car, but it's very valuable if you put it in a larger car. So, like, for example, Nexo is an SUV, and it's the only SUV that is sold in the United States that is hydrogen powered. But by using that formula, we can apply that to big trucks, like heavy-duty trucks.
Right. You know, Brandon, and everybody realizes, everybody goes, hydrogen, you know, wow, this is fuel cell. This is really next-generation stuff. Well, in a way it is, but you guys came out with it, what, in 2003 or something?
Yeah, so we started out with an early prototype on Santa Fe, mm-hmm. and we had a partner for that, and we had it with the Tucson fuel cell, and it was more of a demonstration fleet. But what that did is it allowed us to prepare for the day when we offer an SUV, a mass-produced SUV, that is hydrogen-powered or a heavy-duty truck.
Well, you know, honest to gosh, it seems to me like heavy-duty trucks seem to pollute the most. They're everywhere. I mean, our country runs on trucking, okay? I mean, it's just every even in, I'll be looking up on, you know, the 45 or I-10 or something, and there's truck after truck after truck moving products out of the port of Houston and things like that, but all across the country. And to have some of them that wouldn't be polluting would be really great.
Yeah. So we, in October, what we did in Switzerland is we actually delivered 7 fuel cell trucks to that market. And what that does is there is a business model, and on this business model, like you think about the infrastructure and stations, how much would it require for, you know, a gas station to be profitable, or, you know, right, to make a business case? So there would be like 700 cars that visit that fuel cell, that gas station. But for a hydrogen station,
maybe all you need is 10 to 15 trucks to get hydrogen, and that would make it make the business case. And so what we're thinking is the same thing would apply for U.S. You know, in California, there are already 44 stations, and by 2025, there's going to be 150 stations, and hydrogen is very abundant, and if it expands across the country, we can see heavy-duty trucks travel across America.
You know, you're exactly right, but think about it. Brandon, you back up 15 years, and, well, we're going to have an electric car. Where are the charging stations? Oh, there's three of them in Houston, or there's five of them in L.A. And you're thinking, like, wait a minute. If I think of gas stations, because that look how long it took to have that network of gas stations, fuel stations, you know, just normal gas stations. I mean, you could say there's 44 of them, but there's 44 of them in like a five-mile radius where we live, right?
Yeah, in California, yes. And one of the things about electric vehicles, we will offer a significant amount of electric vehicles, and we'll have the Ioniq platform where we're going to have three unique dedicated electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. And infrastructure will grow. But one of the things about full electric vehicles is the time to charge is a lot more than, like, say, a hydrogen vehicle, where it takes only 8 to 20 minutes, depending on how big your tank is, to fuel up. So it's very fast with the hydrogen vehicle.
Well, you know, you're right. And the fact is basically it splits the atoms in the hydrogen, and it produces electricity, and that electricity runs electric motors. So it really is, it's a fuel cell electric vehicle, not a battery electric vehicle. But I was talking to your guys, and they were saying it takes 15 tons of batteries to run a Class 8 truck. In other words, an 18-wheeler. I mean, that comes off of your total that you can carry. So the fact that you guys have this little bitty fuel cell, that makes it a lot easier.
Yeah, exactly. And then also on the Exient that will be coming to the United States, they're targeting a 1,000-kilometer range. Oh. And 1,000-kilometer equates to over 600 miles of range. So it is phenomenal. And you can actually see application in the United States.
Oh, absolutely. I would think so. Sure. And then they could put the refueling stations where all the trucks, you know, the truck stops and things like that. So it wouldn't be so expensive. And eventually, you're right, they'll go into all the neighborhoods and things like that. But it's going to take, you know, 10 years to get that to happen. But in maybe 5 years, we could get the trucks on the road. And I think that would be great not to have. And just think what you could do. We could haul more load. It'd be quieter. It'll be great.
Yeah, so that's the value of the hydrogen vehicle is it is going to be a quiet ride and similar to electric vehicles. So that's another plus for drivers of these heavy-duty trucks. They need comfort when they're driving across the country.
Well, absolutely, yes. But I remember, I think, didn't Hyundai start the fuel cell thing back at the Seoul Olympics or something?
Yeah, we did actually have a Nexo at the Seoul Winter Olympics where it was actually autonomous. So I was actually in a seat, and it's pretty neat to see the autonomous hydrogen Nexo drive along in Pyeongchang. I forgot the name.
But, that's okay. But I'll go for it.
the Winter Olympics, and it was just phenomenal. But it was running itself. It was running on hydrogen, and we were also on hydrogen buses as well.
But you guys have had. I went to that truck show and saw you last year, and it was amazing to see how Hyundai has so many trailers and have nitrogen cooling the trailers and all these big. I mean, you guys are into heavy duty trucking in a big way.
So we had that big show, and we showed all the future of trucking, and I'm very excited that Hyundai is investing in this area where there is opportunity, and especially we haven't talked about it yet, but the emissions for these hydrogen vehicles is water,
right?
And so it's very clean emissions, and that's where that'll help the environment as well.
You know, you're right, and I know right now the hydrogen is a little expensive to produce, but as there's more of it, more refineries and more areas to produce it, the price was going to drop dramatically, and I think it's going to be really reasonable.
Yeah, so hydrogen is the greenest, most abundant natural resource on the planet, and it is going to be, I anticipate, also our experts anticipate the price going down as well.
You know, I think this vehicle, I mean, looking at the fuel cell, it's tiny compared to a big diesel engine and transmission and things like that. And then to have all the electric motors running everything, it's going to be really, really nice.
Yeah, and then we do have those carbon fiber tanks, and those are very safe to withstand extreme temperatures and pressure. So that's the only thing that's unique. That's unique, that where hydrogen vehicles can be fueled up very quickly, and they're safe as well.
You know, I've read about that. I talked to some of your guys, and they were like, Mike Ziegler was telling me that, he goes, it's like, if we need to go farther, we just add an extra tank. And their tanks are not very big, you know, the size of like a big suitcase. And he goes, you want to go farther? Here you go, put another tank. And if we run out of room for tanks, we'll just put more pressure in the tanks. We have plenty of place to do that. And I'm like, wow, this is like a no-brainer.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you just add another tank, and that's what we did with Nexo, from going from Tucson Fuel Cell to Nexo. And that's where Nexo was a kind of like a testing bed for this truck, because not only are we exploring the technology and offering it to consumers, but we're learning from it and applying it to these heavy-duty trucks. Another aspect of this, and I believe you asked this question in our big digital briefing with all the global executives, like how are you going to service these heavy-duty trucks? Well, we already sell a Nexo fuel cell, and we already have dealerships already servicing that. So it's the same. They already have the expertise in servicing these vehicles.
You know, I know that. I mean, you guys have done really well. And it's funny is people don't realize you guys are way ahead of everybody on this. I know that there's a couple other brands that are actually looking at it and kind of moving that direction. But you guys have a leg up on everybody and producing buses and things like that that are all hydrogen fuel cell. And it really is the wave of the future. I really believe that.
Yeah, I do. I also believe that as well. And then also the Hyundai Motor Group, they're investing also in the value chain. So they're going to be partnering with different companies to all in the supply chain for hydrogen. And so that's very exciting as well, because not only are we developing the vehicle, we're looking at every aspect where we can make a difference to make this succeed.
Well, you know, you're right. And then Hyundai builds a lot of off-highway, you know, off-road equipment and heavy-duty equipment and things like that. And just to think about how nice it would be to have them fuel cell, you know, where they're not putting out the black smoke and all that other stuff they do now when they're building the highways.
Yeah. And so there are some governments that are already pushing for hydrogen. I know in California there's all these different incentives to do that, and hopefully across the nation that'll be offered as well. So that way we offer cleaner emissions throughout the United States.
You know, everybody thinks that the battery electric vehicles are just going to be so wonderful, and that's great. It really is. But the batteries, you know, they take a lot of mining and they take a lot of, like, you know, precious metals and things like that. And not all the countries have them. You know, some countries have them. I know a lot of them are in China, a lot of things like that. So when you get these rare earth metals, getting that stuff out of there and everything, that's not real clean to do that. But hydrogen seems like it's all going to be clean. You know what I mean? All the way down the road here.
Yeah, and they gave an example the last time when we spoke, and one of the head engineers at Hyundai Motor Group tells the story. You know, if let's say all the vehicles go to Texas Stadium and they're all electric vehicles and you want to charge. Now, if every single one of those vehicles charge, you would need X number of nuclear power plants to power all those vehicles getting charged.
Right.
But a hydrogen vehicle, think about that. You know, you just fill up just like a normal gas station.
Right. Right. And people don't think about the fact that if you know, every other or every fourth house in your neighborhood got an electric car, the power grid would just crash and couldn't handle it. So, you know, we're not ready for all the electric vehicles either. So people think we're not ready for hydrogen. Hey, we're just as not ready for electric vehicles, too. Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, we offer full spectrum and we offer the electric vehicles and the hydrogen. But that's we're applying it on certain vehicles, you know, with heavy duty trucks. It makes sense, you know, SUVs. It makes sense. And maybe for battery electric vehicle, it makes sense for smaller cars, you know, where weight is very important and so forth. But, yeah, I'm excited for the future of these alternative fuel vehicles.
Okay, and we can find out more about this if somebody's really interested in getting in this at, what is it, Hyundai.com?
HyundaiNews.com, we have more information on that as well as some pictures. We announced that we will be bringing them to the United States.
All right, that'll be great. We're going to keep in touch with you on this one. Brandon Ramirez, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Mike. I really appreciate it.
It was great. All right, folks, more to come right here on Let's Talk Wheels.
Matt Perrell back with you here on Let's Talk Wheels. So, do you guys follow us on social media? Well, Instagram is a really cool place to follow us. Let's Talk Wheels on Instagram, because we post pictures of our events and where we go, our reviews, our cars, and then on Facebook, Let's Talk Wheels as well. Mike posts all sorts of fun stuff with pictures and what he's driving and what he's got going on. So, both those places, we would love to see you guys go and like and follow and interact with us. Tell us what you think. You know, ask us questions about the vehicles that we're driving. We get different vehicles every week. So ask us what we're driving, what we like, if you're in the market of buying to buy a new vehicle, car, truck, a lease, or a car, SUV, or truck. Hit us up. Let us know what you think. Let us know, you know, any questions you may have onto your car, your truck. Mike is great. We love answering questions when it comes to maintenance or things you're doing on your vehicle, restorations, or whatever you may have going on in your garage. Definitely let us know and give us an opportunity to help and comment on what you're doing. So Let's Talk Wheels on Instagram, Let's Talk Wheels on Facebook. Go search it and you'll find it really simply and really easily. And then who knows? Maybe we'll talk about you on the show and maybe we'll answer your question on the show. Because if you have a question, chances are you aren't alone and other people have the same question. So go check us out there. And as always, go get the podcast of Let's Talk Wheels wherever you get your podcasts. Mike Herzing and I will be back next week for another edition. Same place, same time for Let's Talk Wheels on the Let's Talk Wheels Radio Network.
Okay, folks, as we talked earlier in the show with Jeremy, welcome to the Let's Talk Wheels podcast. Jeremy Berenbaum, classic.com, CLASIQ. Jeremy, let's continue our discussion about classic cars.
Yeah, last week you were telling me you've been looking for a truck, and you sent me some text with some photos and stuff. Have we gone out and looked at anything yet, or it's still in the research process?
I'm still doing some research. I found some great vehicles, but they're all out in Michigan and up on the Rust Belt. And I saw a nice Bronco, a 95 Bronco. I'm like, oh, I'm really not interested in Bronco. But, you know, God, the price was pretty good. And I realized where it was, and it had a bunch of – you know, it's funny. When you see these pictures, and there's 25 or 30 pictures of this vehicle, but there's not one picture of the undercarriage, what do you think? There's something wrong.
I'm a little scared or hesitant. At least I want to ask about it, right?
Right. And, it's got some rust, but it's not rusted through. Oh, okay, not yet anyway. And that's part of the problem. And so I've found some 70s trucks and things like that. But people, I mean, a nice 72, 73 GMC Chevrolet or even Ford, you know, some of those things are $20,000. And
yeah,
the sad
really
part
depends.
Is they're getting it.
Yeah, that's the tough part, is you can't even negotiate with someone because they're like, hey, I'm getting offers. So.
Yeah, I know. And the other thing is, I'm looking at these trucks and they're great. They're just wonderful. But the problem is my wife can't really drive a manual. So, okay. And so I look at this truck and it's a great price. I'm like, but it has manual transmission. I'm like, oh, man. Wouldn't it be worth me buying it at a good price and then adding an automatic? You know, have you ever seen people do that?
Yeah, definitely see it. And I see it more in the 60s and 70s trucks than the 50s trucks.
Right.
And I'll tell you why. Because in the 50s trucks, most of them are inline motors,
right.
And so
the cars just work better with a manual transmission in terms of how easy they are to drive because they're low power and that sort of thing.
Right.
So I wouldn't really recommend it in that era. But if you're going to a V8 and you have, you know, a 60s or 70s, one, you have a lot more transmission possibilities you can use, and the application of putting it in is easier.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you know, the engine, the V8 engine is a little bit easier to work with, putting on an automatic transmission. It's going to drive smoother. You don't have to worry about hills and gearing and that sort of thing. That if you do it on a straight six motor, per se, you're going to have a little bit of issues climbing hills and stuff, because with a manual transmission, you have much better control of what gear you're in.
You know, you're right. And then some of the automatics, I remember my 69 F100 had a 3-speed automatic, and it was a terrible transmission. You know, it didn't shift very smooth. And still on the freeway at 65, it was singing the song. I mean, it was winding up.
Yeah. But when you talk about value, I don't think that, you know, changing a 60s or 70s car from a manual transmission to an automatic transmission really hurts the car.
Mm-hmm.
And the process in doing it is pretty simple. You know, you're going to have to cut a little metal piece to fill in the hole part where the original shifter came through, and then figure out if you're going to do a column shift, you might have to replace the whole column on the car. But those are small things in the grand scheme of things. And, you know, like we've been talking about, there's some things you want and some things you don't want. So is it finding the car that has everything that you have, or most of the stuff, and then you can add the couple things later on that you really need to have, like AC or something like that.
You know, you're right, and there's so many vehicles. I mean, I found probably some of the nicest vehicles. Some of these things still have the original paint and all the patina, and it's all rusty looking, and it has something like, Provo, Utah City, you know, city water, you know, water department or something like that written on the side, and it's all faded
yeah.
out. And those are the ones that are worth $22,000, $24,000.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, sometimes it's kind of crazy when you try and figure like why one car is at one price and another is so totally different, you know, especially when they're in very far geographic locations. It's hard to compare. And at that point, you really got to pick and choose what on each car does it have that you really want, and what can you get away with, you know, not purchasing on the car right now, but eventually add. So, you know, when you're talking about doing manual transmission, another thing that, or automatic transmission switch from manual, another thing that a lot of people do is they want power brakes, right?
Right.
Power brakes, power steering. In the older cars, they don't have that. In the 60s, 70s, a lot more common. So those are things that you can add after to also help you add value to your car, so that when you go to sell it, you know, you at least could possibly make some more money than what you paid for it.
Yeah, folks, we're talking to Jeremy Barenbaum from Classic.com, C-L-A-S-I-Q. Jeremy, some of these vehicles I'm looking at, and I'm looking at like a 60 model or 62 Ford F, you know, or a Chevrolet pickup, and it'll say it's got a Camaro front clip. Tell the folks what the advantages of that and what they did on that one.
So what that means is the front clip is like the whole driving portion of a Camaro. So the suspension, that would give you, on a normal truck, you'd have leaf springs,
yeah,
you know,
horrible.
For the bumps. But if you change for a different suspension and a new front clip, you get spring shocks and power brakes, and it would be easier to do a power steering conversion because, you know, that's everything that's controlling your suspension.
Right.
So the clip is really, you're taking the whole driving portion of a Camaro and putting it on the frame of your truck. It's very common. It doesn't hurt the value. If anything, I would say it increases the value because it gives you the ability to add power steering,
right.
power brakes, and, you know, the car's going to ride smoother on the freeway with leaf springs. You're going to be bouncing really hard unless you have a heavy load in there to kind of settle leaf springs down.
Right.
But with spring suspension, you're going to ride much smoother. You're not going to bounce around as much.
Now, did they take the frame like from the firewall forward and just cut it off and weld the other frame onto it?
No, it's not that. It's actually bolted on
to
the frame. So it's something that isn't permanent, and it's easy enough to do that, you know, with some simple direction. You can almost do it in your garage over the course of a weekend or two.
Oh, okay, because I know that a lot of people say it's got power steering, power brakes, you know, air conditioning and all that other stuff, thinks because it has a so-and-so front clip. I saw one of them was a Studebaker truck that had a old Toronado front clip, and I was like, that's kind of cool.
Interesting. Yeah, I see a lot of Mustang II front clips on Ford trucks, and that's basically because they fit really well. And so that's something you want to research if you're going to go ahead and do it, is just to make sure that you're looking for the right front clip for your model truck that'll fit. And because it's such a common thing that everybody does, there's a lot of information on the internet for it. It's not something like, oh, I'm doing a diesel swap motor or something that's totally crazy and out of this world. You're doing something that a lot of people have done before, so the parts are readily easy to find and readily available.
I remember somebody that I knew, a guy that had a Volkswagen van, and he put a Porsche engine in it. So it's similar to doing something like that, right?
Yeah, kind of like that. You know, you're definitely adding value to the car because you're making it more drivable. You are kind of removing some of its originality, but for something like that that you're looking to use every day, I don't think that hurts at all.
Yeah, I mean, for some of these people, like, you know, do I want a $30,000 or $40,000 Trailer Queen truck that I'm afraid to drive because there's going to get a scratch on it or something? I'm not looking for that. I'm looking for something I can actually drive. Unfortunately, I like something in the 50s and early 60s.